I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I think I saw one where pay was absolutely equal. And, so, you know, everybody piles in on the comments saying, bravo, bloody hell, this is amazing. I noticed a few women's wear companies coming up where they were saying that pay is something like 30% lower for women than for men.
Welcome to Fuel's new business briefing with me, your host, a Smith Called Keith, and my good friend and research guru, Victor Horton. The new business briefing is brought to you by agency new business sales platform, The Advertist. Trade news, insight, contact data, people moves, research, tenders, mergers, acquisitions, and funding news all in one place to help you find your next new client. For a free trial, visit theadvertist.com or send an email to hello@theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. On the new business briefing today, we discuss luck, fate, and serendipity and the role it plays in the creative industries, how Google is being replaced by Reddit when people are searching for facts, what Gen Z or Gen Z really think and why you should care, the gender pay gap bot and diversity, and LinkedIn's new career break product and how it helps people taking some time out. So let's get on with it. Hello, Vic.
Hi, Keith.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. And so let's just jump straight into it. I mean, what research news did you pick out that you wanted to do a bit of a sort of a deeper dive on?
I suppose it's those, there are a couple of stories which touch on subjects that come up constantly. Some of them are quite whimsical little pieces, like I quite enjoyed the creative brief item that was written by a Wolf Olin strategist on serendipity.
Yes.
Which is all about finding something valuable or pleasant when you're looking for something else entirely.
A very interesting subject, and it's one that's close to my heart. I mean, why did that appeal to you?
I think it's because it's pretty much a job requirement when you're in working in anything in the research field, because a lot of the time on the more data-rich subjects where you're asked to retrieve data from XYZ, you can kind of miss the big picture. When you're spending too long looking through the microscope, you really right. need to stand back and look at the landscape. It's that kind of thing. And when you do that, you start to explore maybe other subjects and things, little items of interest pop into your head and they stay there, and you think you've forgotten it, and then sometimes it'll pop up again and you'll find it incredibly valuable.
And sometimes you get asked it as a trivia sort of question in Trivial Pursuit or something. So this piece that you're talking about in Creative Brief, this was by a fella called, I'm going to get his name wrong, so forgive me, but it's either Milan Kendall Shah, yeah. Right? Milan Kendall Shah. Now, he's a strategist at Wolf Olin's, okay?
Yeah.
And the whole point of this was that this is about fate and serendipity. Yeah. And, you know, how it can, you know, how you can miss it if you're not being aware of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good description. So in a way, you've always got to be switched on to notice these things. I think, I say you have to be switched on. I think maybe we're always switched on and you don't actually notice it.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of it has got to do, you see, it was quite interesting that you pulled this up, because a couple of quotes that I pulled out of the Wolf Olin's research was that it's easy to forget that many great outcomes happen out of the blue, all right? So
yeah.
A lot of these, like, really successful things can just happen you know, and we like to credit luck for them and things like that. I mean, there's another thing that what do we stand to gain from opening ourselves up to the unforeseen? So this is what you were talking about, you know, being receptive to all these things. And it actually put me in mind. I've just finished reading and I'm going to start reading it again. It's a great book. I don't know whether I've discussed this with you, but Go Luck Yourself by Andy Nairn of Lucky Generals. And it's a book about very, very similar subject. And let me just hit you with this, and I think you might quite enjoy this, because he, in one chapter, he talked about how Velcro was discovered. Okay. And in 1941, Georges de Mestral was walking with his dog. Okay. And when he got back, he noticed that he was covered, both him and the dog were covered in these burrs. Okay. So he put those under a microscope. Right. And after 15 years of examination, right, he eventually came up with this hook and loop thing of Velcro. And it's basically, you know, it's using a thing called biomimicry, where, you know, we manufacture something that nature makes for itself. And the great thing about this book, and I'm going to plug it because he's a great guy anyway, but Andy always, at the end of each chapter, does a kind of a moral, you know, to the to each chapter. And he says, basically, convention tells us that we need to focus on the task at hand, right? But luck says, just go and take a walk, all right? Go outside. And basically, the thing that you learn from that is, you know, what can you learn that Mother Nature has already invented? What can you learn from Mother Nature? And this is all about this piece of research. I thought, I couldn't believe how similar the two things were. So sorry for taking you on a random sort of escapade there. But I just wonder whether it was, whether that kind of resonated at all.
Yeah, it does. I mean, serendipity is just one word for it, isn't it? I mean, it sounds quite a niche thing because nobody ever uses the word serendipity during normal conversation.
Serendipity, yeah, fate, and luck. I mean, I guess they're all in the same area, aren't they?
Well, they are. And one of the things I started doing when I first started work at Publicis, the ad agency, about 20 years ago. because I was new to the whole advertising sector, I didn't know how these people worked. And so the creatives in particular were a huge mystery to me. And I made an effort to try and interview as many of them as possible, just to do it sort of like an audit.
Right.
Or just see how my department could help them. And when I'd ask them, where do you get your inspiration from? They all came up with completely different answers. I mean, if you ask that of a strategist, you'd still get a variety, but it'd be quite a narrow one. Whereas with the creatives, it was all sorts of things, starting from the obvious, going around for a walk,
right?
To doing to putting themselves in actual danger. Because it stimulated their brain. And some of them, there was a great little cinema around the corner of the office in Baker Street, and people would often just sit in there, not necessarily watch the film, but just to have the film playing and just let their minds wander.
Yes.
And a whole lot of different ways of sort of stimulating their mind.
It's a fantastic way, and we've covered it on plenty of occasions. In the Fuel podcast as well, where we've interviewed creatives about how they are creative. And every to a person, all right, they all say basically the art of being creative is to let your brain solve the problem for you, right?
Yeah.
Is to just, you know, all this stuff anyway, so if you just distract your mind, your kind of upfront thinking, all right, if you just take that out of the equation, just let your brain do the work, it will come up with it. That's why, you know, you get musicians that you know, take a nap after learning a piece of music. They'll go and take a nap because it kind of helps program, you know, helps the brain to sort of familiarize itself with all the new work that they've just taken on. So yeah, fascinating stuff, Vic. Great stuff. So okay, so that was the Wolf Olin's piece. So what else have we got here? We got any other interesting bits that you want to run past us?
Yeah, well, I quite like, I enjoy dodgy contrarian claims that struggle against perceived wisdom. So I was rather taken by the blog item that claimed early adopters are shunning Google search results in favour of Reddit posts.
This is fascinating.
Yeah, it amuses me immensely because I'm a heavy Reddit user. I just love Reddit. It's probably the place I go to for news the most.
It's the front page of the internet.
It kind of reminds me of the wild early days of user-generated content when forums and blogs used to rule the roost.
That's right.
And there's an awful lot of crap on there as well.
Of course. I mean, you have to sift your way through it. I think that's half the problem.
Yeah.
But I mean, why is this happening, and why did you pick it up?
Well, I think it's because it's reading about the complaints that Google's becoming awful at certain things. So, but one of the accusations is that it shoves clickbait-filled sites and advertising on the results page. So it's over-commercialised, and you have to scroll through, goodness knows, maybe half a dozen or so ad sites that kind of relate to your search before you actually get to the one that you want.
Yeah.
And other complaints that once you get to page two and page three of the search results page, it's actually showing less relevant content than it once did. I mean, the trouble is it really does depend on the user and how you use Google. Because if you tap in a search, it might be incredibly annoying to know, suddenly be told, well, what this is what other people are searching. No, because if you know exactly what you want, that sort of stuff gets in the way. It's just noise. I mean, seen in another story, how the sort of almost extreme right wing in the USA has a lot of sort of online, active people online who are distrustful of Google and move over to DuckDuckGo because their favourite conspiracy theory sites are apparently relegated by Google to the lower pages. It doesn't discriminate quite so much against them. So it's now being, you could say it's being poisoned by being seen as a right-wing search engine, because suddenly you've turned something that should be quite innocuous into something quite political, which is a bit of a pity, really, because DuckDuckGo, I love the idea of DuckDuckGo.
But, this brings me on to a couple of things, actually. Firstly, the situation about Google. We did a podcast a few weeks ago with a guy called Chris Ailey, who runs a search engine optimization company called Honcho. And he told us that, yes, there is this problem with Google because obviously it's a commercial organization, it's a commercial business. So, you know, the highest bidders are going to get to the front of the queue. So obviously the results that you're seeing are going to be skewed by one form or another. But
yeah,
one of the biggest problems with this is, well, there is no alternative. All right, there is no alternative to Google. You know, I mean, you've got, you know, things like Apple or Microsoft are trying, but I mean, they've got so many fingers in so many different pies. Well, obviously, so did Google now. But I mean, you know, the fact is that there's always going to be problems with internet searching, because it's, you know, it can take you down some rabbit holes. And I mean, you're talking about DuckDuckGo, and I mean, my position on this is that I know that they say it's private, and you know, but this stuff always gets recorded somewhere.
Yes,
doesn't it? You know, it's like these people that buy their own VPN. You know, I mean, it bothers me as to why somebody would do that. And then on top of that, it's like, well, somebody is recording all this. You know,
that's right. And there's always been a sense of manipulation over the Google search results. I mean, one of my favourite cultural periods was around about 15 odd years ago, when scepticism became rife, and it was the days after Richard Dawkins published his famous atheist book, and there was a rise of a lot more people that are scrutinizing the sources,
yes,
new sources and so forth. And when it came to Google, one of my favorite stories was that there was a big movement amongst the sort of religious conservative right in the States to challenge Wikipedia. The problem being that Wikipedia's information is far too liberal. And so what they did was they started to write their own version of Wikipedia called Conservapedia. Now, I don't know if it's still going, but Conservapedia had some amazing definitions out there. Like I've got an old presentation here where I've got some of their definitions. So they may have changed now, assuming Conservapedia is still around. Like kangaroos, for example, they're described as being, they were bred from passengers from Noah's Ark and migrated to Australia. But there's debate whether they rafted on mats of vegetation torn up by the receding floodwaters.
What the hell?
Well, there's the 19th century. This is a good one. The 19th century was the time period between 1800 and 1901. It was a busy time because lots of things were going on at once. That's the 19th century. So there's your history thesis all in one.
There you go. Lots of things were going on all at once.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Or how about this? Pens. A writing implement, it uses ink as opposed to graphite or blood. And people who study rocks are referred to as geologists, not to be confused with geometry. Now the thing is, I mean, there are so many more of these, but the thing about this was that the Conservapedia were trying to do was they're trying to ensure that their definitions got onto the their entries got onto the first page of a Google search, because Google searches for these kind of topics would inevitably call up a Wikipedia entry, and the idea was to try and seed so much Conservapedia information out there and to have people using it so much that it would challenge it, but it never happened.
Well, I mean, I think there. You know, the interesting thing about all this as well is that, I mean, you know, we had apart from your good self, you know, who we rely on for research, you know, we had Andrew Tenzer on as well from Reach, and we've got Ian Murray coming on the show as well. But I mean, you know, they'll all say, and I'm sure you say as well, that if you have to do the hard work, right? You have to. If somebody tells you something, fact check it. Go and check it. Go and find out. Don't just take it as, you know, as read, or take it as Reddit, and you know, and that it's gospel. But okay, well, excellent. Okay, so now we've got people using Reddit as a search engine now, and so what else we got?
One of my favourite topics is something that's quite that's a point of argument in the trends area, which is generations. When we talk about groups of people in these putting these very wide ranging age groups, and we say, "Oh, these people are like this because they were born then." I mean, but the thing is, I've always found it quite a good way of looking at, or at least basing any study or research onto broad societal trends. And Global Web Index, who I think are one of the best online research companies out there, they recently published a white paper on what Gen Z really think and why you should care. Now,
yes, I remember this coming up, yeah.
Well, the first controversy is, do you use the Americanization? Everybody refers to Gen Z.
Is it Gen Z?
Or you can call them Zoomers, is another way. But anyway, these are people aged, I think we've seen with them, is between 10 and 25 now. And the way I see it is that they're probably the first generation that has to have its, I don't know, its character and its attributes constantly rewritten because of all the things that are happening that are shaping the way they think and the way they're going to develop into adults. And I used to describe in any macro trends presentation, when I'd be talking about generations, the big almost existential traumas that affected the mindset of those generations. So if you're a boomer, you grew up under the threat of the bomb.
Yep.
And you could say that people of that generation arguably developed a carefree attitude in the way of coping. Gen X, which is my generation, their attitudes to sex were changed by the AIDS epidemic. Millennials' economic security was undermined by the credit crunch recession of the late 2000s. Yep. And Gen Z began to come of age as the effects of climate change started to snowball. And that, at first, I mean, that seemed to be, okay, that's the big threat that's going to shape.
That's their generational threat, right?
Yeah, that's it. But my God, that was just the start.
That was just the start.
Bloody hell. Yeah, I mean, now they've got, you've got the teenagers and people in their early 20s, just purely looking at it from an education lens, they've missed out on socialising at school, the university experience because of the lockdowns, the COVID lockdowns. Goodness knows how this is going to affect psychology about relating to hygiene and being in crowds. And now, of course, what with Putin going completely insane, talking about World War III, so it's the bomb again. And on top of that, as the economic nightmare that has been lived through by millennials with not being able to afford housing, that being a particular trauma, and that's colouring the future Gen Z as well. I mean,
it's almost like a perfect storm, isn't it? Of things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've had, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, I put myself in the sort of Gen X sort of category, but you know, I mean, at least then it was still possible to, you know, to get a job and to rent a flat and to still have some money left over to go out and socialise and, you know, and buy a car and do all those sort of life skill things, you know, that you need to do. But I mean, growing up in the climate today, I mean, you know, it's just there's so many different factors that are going to, you know, that will affect their lifestyle. That it's, I mean, really is no wonder why they're kind of looking for ways to escape. We're going to end up with, you know, obviously the climate crisis being solved gives us utopia, and it not being solved gives us dystopia. Okay. But right in the middle there is this heterotopia, which is, and the closest analogy was a movie, which was talking about Blade Runner, you know, yeah, as an exemplar of how this society is going to sort of evolve, where you've got two different societies running parallel to each other, you know, one that's wealthy and the other not, except that, you know, the not wealthy one is going to be huge. You know, so no wonder the sort of millennials and Gen Zs are sort of doing everything that they can to sort of tear it all down, because that's not a future at all, is it?
It's not, and it makes it quite difficult to entice them to buy your stuff, because their attitudes towards material goods in particular are way different to...
I mean, they're all going to be
older generation.
Nihilistic people, aren't they? I mean, they're just going to be, we're all going to die.
I mean, if you look at the anti-work subreddit, on there are people, I mean, it's mostly Americans on there, but a lot of them are saying, what have I got to live for? Because I can't afford to buy anything nice.
Right.
All I can afford to is just put food on the table, pay my bills, and that's it, because the pay is so crap and the job security is so awful. I can resign, but then I just got to hope that more people think the way I do and just get so fed up that it starts to affect the employers. But then you need to have faith in your peers, actually, falling into the same way of thinking.
I think that there is a, you know, that is the hope, is that there will be a sort of a reckoning one day, that fairly soon, that things have to change. You know, the current model is broken and it just doesn't seem to be working. So, I mean, I completely understand where this has come from, this piece of research, and it just frustrates the hell out of me that we're not able to do anything, you know, about it too terribly much. But at least we're highlighting it. So thank you very much for doing that, though, Vic. That's fantastic. And so what else we got? What else? What other bits of research have you found?
Well, the one which was, I mean, it's kind of amusing in a way, kind of sad and kind of annoying at the same time, the gender pay gap bot, which was reported in Vice. And I love the way they describe it as terrorising British employers by, quote, tweeting their virtuous International Women's Day posts with the company's gender pay gap data. And
So what they were doing, all right, they were tweeting back. So when a company was saying that they're, you know, when they were celebrating International Women's Day, for example,
this sort of
bot was tweeting back their downfalls.
Well, it's still going. I mean, you go on it now and you can see, I mean, the latest, it seems to be tweeting at least, three or four times an hour. and it's using official government data that is now, it's compulsory that
the companies
of a certain size actually report the gender pay differences. And so this runs completely automatically now, and it picks up any mention of International Women's Day. So, and it's what's quite shocking actually is how many NHS trusts keep coming up. This has been absolutely awful payers. And I think I saw one where pay was absolutely equal, and so, you know, everybody piles in on the comments saying bravo, bloody hell, this is amazing. and there were, I noticed a few women's wear companies coming up where they were saying that pay is something like 30% lower for women than for men. As you scroll through and then you hit the older post, you see how many have actually been deleted by the originator. So we've got here's one here, the Royal British Legion. To mark Commonwealth Day and International Women's Day, we brought together these serving soldiers, and gender pay gap bot rather coldly at the top says, in this organisation, women's median hourly pay is 18.9% lower than men's. And that's all it does. It just says matter-of-factly.
It's just the cold facts.
It is the cold facts. And it gives it an air of absolute... It is ruthlessly simply brilliant.
That to me is just plain funny. I mean, you know, because that is kind of, that's anarchic digital terrorism at its best. I think it's, you know, it's a perfect blend of what, you know, the younger generation needs to do, how to use technology. And it reminded me when I was reading it of the kid that he's been in the news recently, who was originally developed that app for tracking Elon Musk's jet around the planet. But now he's now turned that to tracking the oligarchs' jets and their yachts and stuff like that. You know, so, I mean, you know, it's a great example of kind of using this technology as a force for good and calling out all this sort of greenwashing, virtue signalling, moral licensing stuff that, you know, that just seems to pervade everybody's feed these days. So, you know, and I think it teaches brands to be true to the mission, you know, and not just put words out there and hope that everybody buys it, you know, because as a wise man once told me, and it's a great great poem, but or a great line, but a man of words and not of deeds is like a garden full of weeds.
Oh, I love it.
You know, and that's what that comes down to is, you know, you've got to live up to what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, behind this, there's kind of like the taboo about pay as well. You can't really, you feel so awkward asking your colleagues, how much do you get paid? but now this data's out there, it kind of forces a bit of transparency where it wasn't expected, certainly from these organisations. And the more we can get at that, the better. I mean, it's bloody amazing. I mean, I found one of those womenswear examples. The brand is called Boo Avenue, B-O-U-X.
Oh, yes, Avenue. Yes, I know Boo Avenue, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got a very nice picture of their lingerie, and anyone obsessed with wearing purple at the moment, the official colour of International Women's Month, in this organisation, women's median hourly pay is 31.4% lower than men's. So, selling to women and also kind of shafting them at the same time.
It's unreal. You know what? I one of my heroes now, my sort of everyday heroes is, I don't know if you've heard of him, but there's a fella called Dan Price, who is the CEO of a company called Gravity Payments. And he has just, I mean, he tweeted recently that he's not sure what this jobs crisis is all about, because he had a job vacancy and had over 700 applicants for it, for this job. And the whole beauty about his business is that he could quite easily have $1 million salary. You know, he's one of these, I think it's an e-commerce business that he's got. He could quite easily have $1 million salary, but he doesn't. He chooses to have a 70 grand a year salary, and every employee there is also paid 70 grand a year. So there's none of this, you know, how sort of the whole sort of secrecy of how much you get paid. It's all out there. Everybody knows how much everybody's paid. And it's incredible how much stress that tends to take away. And also how much you can share, if you actually take the same amount as your employees, how much that money goes, you know, if you're not taking 2/3 of every, you know, of every dollar or every pound that comes into the company, you know, how much you can spread amongst your employees and how much better they reward you in terms of their hard work and loyalty. So, I mean, it's a virtuous circle.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Some people would say that's a bit communist.
They may do. They may do.
But that would be, I mean, I've seen, I try when I can to watch clips from Fox News, and they have examples like this, and the sheer scorn with which these examples are treated, it's absolutely shocking.
I know. And yes, it is. I think the point to the whole, you know, the gravity payments thing is that that there is another way of being able to do this. I'm not saying that it's a communist model or anything else like that, but the idea of being able to still have, and it's that old, I mean, I don't know, do you ever watch The Walking Dead?
Oh, well, I used to until I just got so fed up with each season being a new bunch of arseholes trying to kill the main characters. I want to see people survive and get zombies. That's what the fun is. But yes, I know it. Yeah.
The great thing about them leaving a box of, boxes of supplies, and they had written on the box, you know, is like, take what you want, leave what you don't. That is a moral for life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember Sam Harris was talking about this in his podcast a few weeks ago, and he was talking about various people that actually managed to reach billionaire status but then felt a bit uncomfortable about it, and they fostered a work-to-give philosophy,
yeah,
which is very similar to what you're saying. So, I mean, it's about sort of treating capitalism as part of a mixed economy rather than it being political at all. I mean, yes. I was just joking about the communism thing because, of course, it's nothing like communism. But it's just a way of moving away from the sort of traditional.
I agree completely.
The traditional model. So yeah. I mean, it sounds like a great place to work.
All right, listen, we got time for one more. What else we got? We got one more piece.
Well, it's LinkedIn introducing career breaks.
Oh, I love this. This is helping people that have been taking a career break, right?
Yeah, it is essentially. But I mean, behind that, there's the the end, if you like, of the old one job for life model, or staying at a particular place for ages and right. Having a sort of linear career. It's and now we're living in the age of portfolio careers, more empowerment in the job market. If you're lucky enough to have accumulated the right experiences for that, and also broken life stages in the sense that you study, you're at school, you study, you get a job, you get married, you have children, etc. You know, right. that old set of life stages, they're completely different, where people will maybe set aside education for when they feel they're better suited for it, or actually plan a proper break.
And the fact that it's LinkedIn as well, I think is an interesting thing to me, because, you know, I mean, let's face it, LinkedIn started out as it's a recruitment platform. You know, that was it was a way for people to get jobs. So the fact that they're actually getting out ahead of this, I think, is important for them from a brand perspective. You know, the fact that this does is it highlights the whole kind of facile nature of the old recruitment model. You know, because we do like to do different things at different times, and it does help us. So, I mean, I'm all for it. I think if you want to take a break and go and learn something else for a couple of years and then come back and bring those skills back in, why can't you, as a carer or as a working mum or, you know, a gig worker or something else, why can't you? Why does that not count? Why is that seen as a score against you? It's just incredible.
It is, and you hear so many horror stories about people going through the recruitment process, and yet, on the other hand, you hear other anecdotes about people who, through word of mouth, managed to get a job because somebody in a good position in a particular firm appreciated their life skills and said, come in and have a chat. I mean, there are those two different types of experience.
We've had this conversation again on Fuel. We were talking with Andrew Tenzer about this, and also James Hillhouse at Commercial Break, you know, about generally how recruiters tend to, you know, or tended to recruit people that look like themselves, you know. So, I mean, there is a familiarity to that whole thing. And I think that what that's highlighted is that, you know, that there is a very close-minded approach that employers and recruiters have. And the most important thing over all of this, and this kind of sums up everything that we've been talking about before as well, is that diversity is absolutely crucial to success these days. You know, especially in this, you know, the creative industries that we're in, you know, that we all need to be able to kind of pull on experiences and, you know, pull from a sort of a wide, diverse pool and stuff like that. I mean, because otherwise we're just in a big bloody echo chamber, and, you know, and I mean, we're not going to get any further. I mean, it's the art of it, isn't it? It's being able to source new, fresh thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it kind of loops all the way back to the whole serendipity thing, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what I said.
Beautiful. You did that on purpose, didn't you?
You think I was? You think I've been thinking about this as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, full circle.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Vic, that's absolutely wonderful. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. And so if anybody listening here wants to connect with you and so you can give them a hand with their client research, what's the easiest way for people to get hold of you?
Just email me at victor.horton@vhinsights.com. Horton spelt H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. Or look me up on LinkedIn. I can't imagine there are many Victor Hortons on there.
No, exactly. Okay, ladies and gents, that's it for the show. Thank you once again to Vic Horton, and we'll see you again soon on Fuel's new business briefing. Bye for now.
Bye.
So that wraps it up for another new business briefing brought to you by The Advertist. Don't forget, if your agency needs insight, data, people moves, tenders, and new business intelligence every day, contact the team by email hello@theadvertist.com or visit www.theadvertist.com for more information. My thanks to Donna Smith and Victor Horton for all their hard work. But for now, this is me, a Smith called Keith, signing off until next time on The Advertist New Business Briefing. Bye for now. I'm a Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.